I am Jim Richards along with Jake. So ever since Friday, when markets were reacting to the fact that there is a new variant of concern, we've heard a lot of people saying things, many people perhaps being a little irresponsible. And the last thing that anybody wants to do after we've been 18 to 20 months in this is a freak out in any direction without having all of the information. So earlier today, here was the chief medical officer of health.
Public health is working diligently on conducting case and contact management, and both individuals are in isolation. I want to reassure Ontarians that we are prepared and ready to respond to this or any other new variant.
That's Dr. Moore earlier today, Provincial Chief Medical Officer of Health. We're joined right now by Infection Control Epidemiologist and Assistant Professor at the University of Toronto, Dr. Colin Furness joins us. Doctor, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure, thanks.
Let's get sort of the big one out of the way first, Doctor, because this was a story that we found from reporting out of the UK, giving it a bit of a different twist before we get into everything here in Ontario. And essentially what they're saying is that Omicron could actually be good news, saying that it could speed up the end of the pandemic if it causes mild illnesses. Is that a possibility?
It's a possibility. What the virus is trying to do is evolve to be able to transmit and reproduce as much as possible. It's not in its interest to actually be harmful or fatal. And so it wouldn't be surprising if a virus, as many do, evolve to be more benign, but not necessarily the case, because sometimes becoming more transmissible, as was the case with Delta, it actually became more transmissible by reproducing in your body faster, and that tends to make people a bit sicker. Not dramatically so, but significantly so. So it could really literally go either way. The one thing that Delta has done for us is it's actually kept other variants at bay, including the one from Brazil that was more vaccine resistant. So Delta is an example of a variant that's actually, in some ways, it's kind of perverse to say, but somewhat helpful. The devil you know, as might be a way to say it. With Omicron, it's still the devil we don't know, so we're not sure.
So let me just ask you, what don't we know? What do you know that we don't know? Because you're kind of like knee deep in this stuff. So when you see this, what is your takeaway that you want people to know about?
Well, let's start with what we do know. We do know it's more transmissible one way or another. Otherwise, we wouldn't have noticed it. So that's, I think, we can say with certainty. Whether the transmissibility is because it's evading immune systems or whether it is simply more better at reproducing, we don't know. It could be either. We also know there's a lot of mutations on the spike protein, and since the vaccines teach our immune system to recognize the spike, the more mutations, the more likely it may be that the vaccine will become less effective. You may remember the Pfizer vaccine was 95% effective against COVID a year ago. Now with Delta, it's down to 88. We could lose a few more percent. That's entirely possible. And you know, that's not nothing. It's not a catastrophe, but it's also not trivial. We have to wait and see.
So when you hear the Minister of Health talk about speeding up third shots for Ontarians and lowering the age requirements for us to be able to get them, is that a good move on their part?
That would be a good move even without Omicron. That's there's no reason why we should be flushing doses down the toilet and making people wait when we actually could, in an orderly way, be moving people to a third dose. We seem to have a three-dose vaccine on our hands, and this has been the slow way we have discovered it. It may be that there is a fourth shot in our future if Omicron or other variants end up being somewhat vaccine escaping. Don't think that Moderna and Pfizer both aren't studying that new variant right now and looking at that very, very carefully. So that's also something that's possible. Again, I don't think we need to catastrophize this, but I do have one criticism of our Chief Medical Officer of Health, and that is to say we aren't using science to guide policy. And when we're not using science to guide policy, we're bringing a knife to a gunfight. We're leaving levers unpulled. And that's a bad idea, especially if we may be coping with a more transmissible variant. And by that specifically, I mean recognizing airborne transmission. It's the one big failing that our Chief Medical Officer of Health has not been able to account for. Science is clear, but the policy isn't.
Okay, so what would that tweak be for you if they're not recognizing enough the airborne transmission of it? What are you suggesting should be done?
Well, I would say that restaurants, gymnasiums, and movie theaters, and any other function that that one cares to name where people are not wearing masks, we need aggressive air quality standards. We absolutely need that. It's crazy that you see people sitting in a coffee shop shoulder to shoulder with condensation on the inside of the windows, and you know where that water comes from, and they're not wearing masks. I mean, that's a COVID dream right there. We need HEPA filtration. We need ventilation, and government should be paying for it too, by the way, because restaurants have been battered for almost 2 years. But it's crazy to have people in that kind of crowding, in that kind of shared air environment, without air mitigation, without filtration and ventilation. If Omicron or, let's say, Delta has another resurgence, it would be very, very easy to imagine a lot of super spreader events coming from this behavior. We could fix this. We know what to do, and it's kind of frustrating to me that we don't.
You don't go in restaurants?
I will not. I will not. No. If the restaurant has HEPA filters and ventilation and are sort
how
of
many do
that as a safety feature, I would.
How many do? I mean, I can't think of any.
No, I know of one. There's a Schnitzel House in Mississauga, and he's active on Twitter. And I, when I have time, I will go because I really like to support. He's been very vocal. He just went and spent a lot of money, and he's got really scrubbed air in his place, and I really respect that.
So not that anybody's in any type of hurry for another variant after this one, but what are the likelihoods that there could still be more that are, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for, gestating or growing somewhere?
Interesting question. You know, there's a new variant born every minute of every day, and for the most part, the new variants and mutations, because this is what viruses do, amount to nothing. They confer no advantage. So you're really asking what proportion of all of those are likely to actually confer advantage. That is unknowable, or at least unknowable by me. A virologist might be able to provide a better answer, but I'm not sure they could. I mean, a lot of it has to do with chance, and it's not an infinite. There's not an infinite number of possibilities. There is. It is finite, but it is still a very large number of possible mutations and combinations, and we just don't know.
The two people that were talking about and making the news and having press conferences because of, they flew into Canada. Does that mean that they would have had a PCR test and been double vaccinated?
Presumably yes.
Yeah.
Presumably yes. There's a recent news report, I think just today, from Israel saying a third dose person seems to have given Omicron to another third dose person. So it's you know, there's a little bit of suggestion to me that there is some vaccine evasion here with this. But again, if so, it will be incremental. And within a couple of weeks, I think we'll have lab study results that will give us an indication of that. And that's important. But remember, vaccination by itself is only one tool. We really need to be diligent with air quality. In with masking.
So you've kind of done it, but I'll ask you to do it again because we've got about a minute left. For someone that has just joined the conversation or has listened to the entire conversation, can you encapsulate what we should be doing right now for more than just a little bit worried about this as an average person?
Yeah, well, I mean, we should be doing what we're doing, which is getting vaccinated, wearing masks. I wear an N95 mask now when I'm out shopping because I have seen mask diligence really drop, and that's concerning to me. There's no question, and it's like defensive driving. The worse the other drivers are, the more defensive you need to be, and I think that's actually a very healthy analogy. So, you know, practice defensive breathing. Maybe that's the way to say it. You know, to wear a mask, to be careful, be diligent, and promote vaccination, and be careful who you trust. I mean, be diligent in terms of who you trust in terms of sharing air, and HEPA filters wherever you can.
Would you travel over the holidays?
I might consider it. It's just in our family pattern we don't. Mm. So it's not something that I'm consciously giving up. I think in the pandemic, less travel is better. Travel is a bad thing, just because it provides the mechanism for COVID to spread. And so my feeling is, if you don't need to travel, this is a good time to not travel. And I know that's not a popular opinion, but the less travel that goes on, the greater our collective safety. So I might, but I'm not rushing to it.
Doctor, we appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. Dr. Colin Furness, infection control epidemiologist, assistant prof at the University of Toronto.